Way back when I was thinking about starting a high-ticket dropshipping business, the one thing I was looking for was someone to show me what one of these sites looks like. So John and I have done that for you at dropshipbreakthrough.com/go. So head to dropshipbreakthrough.com/go and watch the free training.
Now that we've shut down the Patreon and we're no longer putting out new episodes over there, we wanted to put some of the old episodes out here on the free feed. But due to how old some of them are, we wanted to provide a little bit of context before each episode. So this episode was recorded on August 18th, 2022, and it's titled Handling Supplier Objections and How to Follow Up. And in this episode, John and I go through every supplier objection that we can recall having dealt with and exactly how we dealt with it. So if you're in the stage of calling suppliers, or maybe you called a bunch before and you need to circle back, this episode is for you. There is a lot of gold in here, and it's all about, again, handling the objections that are going to come up when you call suppliers, really how to prepare yourself for the type of replies you're going to get, the gatekeepers you're going to run into, and then how to follow up with those suppliers to make sure you seal the deal and move forward in your business. There's some unique situations that come up. There's also ones that come up that are very, very common. All of them are addressed in this episode. Again, if you've been looking for how to handle supplier objections when calling high-ticket dropshipping suppliers, this is the episode for you. If you are an Aussie listening to this podcast, I have good news for you. John and I had so much fun throwing a live event in Minneapolis in July that we have gone ahead and already set ourselves up for another live event, this time down under in Noosa, Australia, on November 27th, 28th, and 29th. If you're looking to get tickets to join us, we have about 15 tickets remaining. You can find those at dropshipbreakthrough.com/live. Learn about that. You are going to need to be a member of Dropship Breakthrough. So if you're already a member, head to that page. If you're not a member and you've been thinking about signing up, now's the time. Come join us in person in Noosa, Australia, in late November. Or if you are from somewhere else in the world and you missed the live event in Minneapolis, come on down to Australia in late November. I can't imagine a better time to be on the ocean with John and myself and a bunch of our students. dropshipbreakthrough.com/live is the place to hop in. Now on to today's show. Patreon, we're back. We're keeping this weekly schedule, John. I'm proud of us. I don't know how we continue to pull this off, but I'm really proud of us. I really hope we don't miss one. And then just, you know, we kind of fell off back in April. We missed like a month, I want to say. I don't want to do that again. So I'm glad we're on schedule here. And we continue.
Yeah, look out, everyone. Look out. In about 3 months, we're just going to be sitting here talking about our dogs and our cats and, you know, the weather.
Oh my God.
Talk about the weather. What's the weather doing?
Oh, if you ever hear me talking about the weather, just grab a gun. So, you can't get those in Australia. Never mind.
Yeah. That's because people don't need guns, Ben.
I know people that hunt for a living, bro. They fill their freezer for the year, and that's where they eat from.
Yeah. You know, there's like another 7.7 billion people on the planet that don't have guns, right? Outside of America. And we're all doing just fine right here.
Or food to eat. Some of them, you know? They could use some of the freezer meat.
Oh, fuck off. Half of you idiots would probably shoot yourselves before you shoot someone else.
Believe me, I don't get behind all that. We can get political. We don't need to talk weather. We could talk political. I don't get behind all that either.
That's it. We could start talking about politics, hey, all the time. That'd be gold.
I would say gold mine. Nearly everyone in Wisconsin owns a gun, and I am not one of those people. My mom wouldn't let us have squirt guns when I was a kid, man. She was definitely against this stuff. Everyone I know is, you know, they're right now they're out there hanging their orange stuff out and they're getting, you know, their camouflage stuff ready. And just like hunting is kind of a way of life up here.
Yeah. Look, I don't got any problem with hunting, I guess, in theory. Right. I get that. But yeah, at the same time, people be like hunting with a gun. Like, you're soft. Yeah. You're not like these dudes. I mean, you can hunt in Australia, right? You can do that here. And you can get guns in Australia. You just can't get like, here's 50,000 rounds of ammo stuffed up one gun that I can squirt off in about 10 seconds guns, right? Mm. You know, you can't get them here unless you've got some sort of special license. But, yeah, people hunt here. And I get it. Like, these dudes are all macho and they're like, oh, I shot something from a kilometer away. What a man I am. You're not a man. You shot a defenseless animal with a gun. Go get up close and personal and kill it. Then you're a man.
Are you a slingshot with a rock guy? Is that you want to get?
Yeah, mate.
Spear? Are you into the spear?
Yeah, get in there and take that bear down with a knife, you pussy. Yeah.
Jesus.
If you're one of those guys, that's my message to you. You're not a. There's nothing special about you, dude.
Is there bear in Australia?
Nah, there's no bears in Australia. There's bears in America, though. I imagine there's people in America that like to shoot bears, probably.
Yeah. I'll tell you a funny story. Let's move away from the darkness here. I'll tell you one funny story. So I golf at this golf course. It's away from the city. It's kind of out in the woods. And occasionally you'll see a bear. Very, very occasionally, right? So I'm on hole number one, which is 330 yards. It's about 300 to the front of the green. And here comes a bear. And it's running, 300 yards away from me. And I'm telling you right now, John, my heart jumped out of my chest. There was this feeling inside me that was like, holy shit, that thing could fucking kill you. Like, it moved like I've never seen anything move in my life. All the other, you know, manly men who hunt around me, they were like, oh, it's just a cub. He's just a little guy. And I'm like, I literally could feel my soul leaving my body. That I felt that intensely. Like, oh my God. And there's people, like one of them, you know, hopped in the cart and they, you know, drove it into the woods to get off the course so we could just keep playing. And I was just, I'll remember that feeling the rest of my life. And it was, you know, legitimately a small bear. But that thing moved, like I said, that thing moved like I've never seen. It was so graceful looking and so fast. And I was just, from 300 yards away, it was a feeling I can't describe. I'm scared shitless right now just thinking about it. I don't want anything to do with bear. And so when people have them near them in their yard, or, you know, bears have these huge territories, but like, yes, people want to, they don't want them near their property, right? And so, you know, they'll do what they need to do to make sure that they're not on their property anymore.
Go and fucking live somewhere else.
There's plenty of people I know that do it for sport too. Like, they just want to.
I just don't get the mentality. Oh, look, there's a beautiful animal. Don't get my gun. Like, whatever.
We probably alienated half the people on this show at this point.
Bye. Let the door hit you on the way out.
We have some stronger views about other things that, you know, maybe those will be future podcasts. I hope people enjoy this show. Thank you for all, you know, continually feeding us content. Today, we have one from a student, and I hope I get this right. Do you actually know the pronunciation of this person's name?
Daniel?
I would not have guessed Daniel. Like, just straight up, I would have said, like, Danny Y'all. Danny Y'all Bial. Danny Y'all Bilal. That's what I would have went. That I'm probably way off.
Well, Daniel. Yeah, I don't know.
I hope we're getting it right. Daniel, apologize if we got it wrong, but he has a great question here about suppliers that I think is a pretty common question. You know, I think we've done a show in the past on like how to call suppliers. You and I have actually tossed around the idea of like, should we just call one just for, you know, shits and gigs, as my mom would say, and record it and act like we own a business. And, you know, we could throw up a storefront in an hour or so, right, and make a phone call. I think that's something we should do in the future. Or, you know, if there's someone listening to this who's like, man, I wish John and Ben would make a phone call for me. Can we record it? Because I'll do it. I don't have a problem giving a phone call. I'm sure that you've done it. Your team used to do that, I know, until you, I believe you lost a team member, actually. You know, condolences for that. But, I'd do it. So if there's someone listening to this that actually wants to help us out with that, we should record it and just put it out, put it in the course, you know, give someone an idea. The problem is there's so many variables here. You never know what you're. John and I started writing down like common objections, and yeah, you know, we've got quite a few on this list, and I bet we could have doubled or tripled this list just in things that we've heard from some of these phone calls or some of these interactions. And so it's very hard to nail down and say, this is what it's going to be like when you call a supplier. It's very hard to give you any specificity because it's, you know, it's a unique thing every single time.
Well, I think there's two parts to it. I think there's what might you say in specific circumstances, but and that's certainly something that we can answer for a lot of the ones that we've heard before. But there's also, like, I think what's also important is when you're going into supply calls, like, what's your mindset around objections? Like, I think a lot of people go into the calls and they're expecting, they don't really have a plan for what's going to happen if somebody says no. Do you know what I mean? Like, or if somebody throws up an objection, like, where are you taking that? How are you following up with that? As well as, and included in that is, like, what do you actually say to some of the common ones? But I think a lot of people, when they're doing this for the first time, get really stumped or feel really stumped when somebody says or appears to be saying, no, I'm not interested. Do you know what I mean?
Which so is,
I think it's
a pretty common response nowadays, right? Like their first reaction is to push you away rather than pull you in, just because they're getting a lot of calls. Like a lot, I've talked to a few of these folks who are like, man, you would not believe the amount of calls I get every single day. And they're all pretty terrible, and they all can't really answer a few simple questions. Or, you know, a big thing that we talk about is build your site so that you have something to show them. Let them know that you're serious. You're building a real business here. And we often get that question. Why would I build a site before I call? Well, this is to get, you know, past the guards, if you will. Get past the first objections so that they realize you're a real human and you actually want to do something here. You're not just trying to make a quick buck. You actually want to build a business and provide them value, which is in the end what they're looking for. I almost want to role play this, John. I don't know if you, like, we did not talk about this before the show, but like, I almost want to role play as if, you know, I'm calling you or you're calling me, and just, you know, off the cuff, hit you with one of these and see what you would do to answer that. Like, how do you feel about that? Should I put you on the spot for all of these?
All of them. Oh, wow.
I don't want to take any of them on. We have a lot of answers here, right? And then I think the bigger thing that we need to address, which is, you know, part of what Daniel asked, was like how to effectively follow up, because you're going to get all these answers. And like the idea that you're going to land suppliers on the first call, while possible, is also like not what happens the majority of the time, in my experience at least. Like you're going to have to do some follow-up. You're going to have to follow, even if they say yes, you're going to have to follow up on them, because, you know, you're another thing that they need to get done that week. And like, They might forget to follow up with you, or they might, you know, put it off kind of thing. And like the follow-up part, I think, is actually more important than handling some of these objections.
Yeah, I think that's important. I think certainly in more recent times, I've noticed that follow-up has become, I guess, more important. I don't necessarily think that, at least in the experience of what I've had going on, that the no's are, you know, people saying they're not interested is higher than it used to be. But certainly what I have noticed a lot of the time is it's taking longer to get sort of the full thing across the line, and like get to the point where you're getting the product information and the pricing and all of that sort of stuff, so you can actually do something with their products. I have noticed in a lot of cases that the time to get there has increased. And so, you know, to make sure that it happens, yeah, you've got to be following up. And you've got to be following up with people who say yes or appear to have said yes, but also people who didn't initially say yes. I mean, there's sort of two parts to that follow-up, I think, as well. So you want to start with the follow-up or the questions?
Before we get there, I got to know, what John recently got a tattoo. I can see him on his knuckles. What does it say, John? John has new knuckle tattoos.
I don't know if it's going to...
This is not a video podcast. Hold fast. What does that mean to you, yeah, John? What does hold fast mean to you?
So that's like one of my personal, like personal internal things that I say to myself. I don't know. I guess you call it self-talk, I guess. So hold fast is like a, you know, I also love the sea and boats and all that sort of thing. So it's like sailor talk, but hold fast is like when there's a storm coming, hold fast. Right? Don't be scared. Don't run away from it. Hold on and just keep holding on, right? Ride that shit. Because it's going to pass, right? So for me, it's something I say, I think when I was younger in life, and this is pertinent to people who are starting a business. When I was younger in life, you know, in my teens and I guess early 20s and that sort of thing, I used to quit a lot of things. Like I'd start things and then I'd quit them. And, you know, if they were too difficult or if they got a little bit challenging, I'd just quit them. And I think for a long time that led me to going sort of around in circles and not really making any of the progress that I wanted to make as a person or in life. And so it wasn't until at some point, I don't know can't exactly pinpoint it, but certainly that got me on the path where I'm on now is I sort of had that discussion with myself that I needed to stop doing that. And I needed to just start doing some things and just do them no matter what. And like, just no matter how hard it was, just keep, or how crap it was or whatever, and just keep doing it. And certainly I think business, my business journey, my entrepreneurial journey, whatever you want to call it, also some of my relationships in, you know, over the course of them, you know, like my marriage or, yeah, my entrepreneurial journey are two of the big ones. Like, there have certainly been times where I wanted to quit out of those things, right? And so that's what I tell myself, that when I'm going to quit, just fucking hold fast, dickhead, right? This is going to pass, whatever it is that's making you think that, and it's better for you to stick with it. It's going to be better. And so, yeah, that's what that means to me.
As a guy who has zero tattoos and can't find meaning to get one, you must have been holding quite fast to say, I'm going to get them on my knuckles. Like, you, I was making,
yeah, but I've got tattoos all over my body, man. I mean, you're either a tattoo person or you're not.
But I was making fun of you before the call. Like, knuckles is, you know, that's like, you might as well hop on the Tyson train and just get a face tattoo next. You know what I mean? Like, knuckles are borderline over the top for me. As a non-tattoo guy who, you know, when you have zero tattoos, you get to judge people with tattoos. That's how it works.
Yeah, I also get to judge people who don't have tattoos.
You're so colorless. All right, anyway, I wanted to see what it said, because I could see your knuckles this whole time, and they did. I don't think I've ever seen them before. So, you know, again, we're on video. No one's watching this on video, so I wanted to see what it said.
No, that's true.
Put a picture into the members group. Let's jump right into the objection. So, like, yeah, hard transition from holding fast into supplier objections. But like, I think the most common thing that I've heard as far as a rejection goes is literally, we don't drop ship. Like, I haven't even usually said the word drop ship. So, you know, no. I'm actually unfamiliar. Is there a script in the course, John?
There is.
Okay. Yep. What is the first line of the script in the course? Because I'm sure I probably do it slightly different personally.
That's a good question. I haven't read it in a while. The first lines in the script are around getting to talk to the right person and introducing yourself, obviously. I don't use the words dropship, though.
Yeah, I don't ever use it either.
Never.
Later on.
Our script in the course doesn't use it, that we give to, you know, a lot of people listening to this are in the course, so you have that script. But yeah, I don't use the term dropship. You know, we're just saying we want to be a retailer of your products on our this is our business, blah blah blah. This is how so I would talk to them how our business works. So, but I don't use the term drop shipping, right? But yeah, you're saying as part of that conversation, like, how it works is, you know, we're going to market to the customer service, sell the products, and we're going to ship the products direct from your warehouse to the customer.
Yeah, I would say this objection that we don't drop ship comes before then for me even. It's like, hello, this is blank company. How can we help you? And I'm just like, hey, my name is Ben. I'm the founder of blank. And we're wondering who we would speak to about becoming a retailer for your products. And it's like right there. Just, we don't drop ship. And I'm like, that's great. Well, I'd love to become a retailer for you. So is there someone I can speak to about that? Like, when I've encountered that one, which is the most common one I've encountered, unfortunately, it's instant. It's right up front. It's almost like there's a gatekeeper, and it's, you know, it's the secretary of sorts, right? Whether he or she, they are tasked with not letting anyone get through as quickly as they can, and only letting important stuff get through. And I imagine that's the case so that the person who is in charge of this, which has more responsibility at the company, is like, hey man, I don't want to get all these phone calls. So here's how I'm going to put that in front of you. And it's usually, you know, it's right away. And so just to give, you know, if you get that, which again, I've gotten it a few times, so I would imagine you're going to get this, just immediately hit them with what I said of like, okay, great. I'd still like to speak with someone about becoming a retailer for your product. Just, you know, deflect, right? Because there's no need to address that you want to drop ship at that point with someone who's not the decision maker.
Yeah, definitely. And my conversation is like, whoever you get on the phone first, it's like, I'm saying to them, I want to speak to whoever in your organization is responsible, like manages your retailer accounts. The person who answers the phone is almost never that person. So yeah, don't get held up by that person. If they said something like that to me and it was right up the front there and I'm not even talking to the right person yet, I would just be saying, fantastic. Yep. Yep. That's all good. Can I speak to whoever is in charge of your accounts or whatever, you know, your retail accounts? And they're going to, you know, either continue to obfuscate or you're going to get moved on to the right person. So, yeah, definitely don't accept it from the gatekeeper.
Have you ever gotten the right person when you called right away?
Probably it happens a little bit more in Australia because you're sometimes dealing with smaller businesses here and maybe, you know, they're not as big an organization. So you might actually get, you know, the manager or even the business owner on the phone the first time. I mean, that's definitely happened to me for sure. It doesn't always happen, but of course, it's probably a bit less common in the US, obviously, because you know, most companies tend to be of a larger size and have more sort of admin type roles and, you know, people answering the phone. And then if you get into really big companies, obviously that's never going to be the case.
Yeah, I have gotten that, but it was in specifically the pellet grill niche because some of the brands I would carry, they are just some guy in a garage who started his brand.
Yeah.
Like they're not that big. I can't remember any of the names off the top of my head, but I can remember one brand where it was like just this dude and he had, you know, two part-time people helping him. And so he, you know, he would answer the phone. And sometimes it's just like those smaller brands, the leader doesn't know how to let go. I'm literally in that position in my Pat's brand. Like I'm not letting go of some stuff I need to let go of. It's the fucking hardest thing in the world to let go and just realize that it might not be as good as I can do it, but you have to let go. And so I think that's happening the same thing. Look, I want to jump right to the next one because it's usually right at the exact same time. Hey, my name's Ben, founder of blank, and I'm wondering who I can speak to about becoming a retailer for your brand. And they say, we're not accepting new dealers at this time. Like immediately just say, we're not accepting new dealers at this time. I've been hung up on right there as well. Just like, we're not accepting new dealers at this time. Click. And I've had to call back, which is, you know, humbling to say the least to have to call back. But John, have you ever been hit with, we're not accepting new dealers at this time, whether it's later on or right away?
Yeah. Once again, I mean, I've probably come across that more once the conversation's underway with somebody rather than it just being like a straight up slap in your face kind of before you even had any sort of conversation with them or made any introductions or anything like that. But yeah, I mean, you hear it and probably that in particular has been, I think, a bit more of a common response since, you know, the whole COVID thing started and particularly given a lot of suppliers and that sort of thing have just been out of stock for very long periods of time. I think more of them have been that's kind of linked to another one that's on our list, which is, you know, we don't have any stock at the moment. So kind of what's the point? It's kind of a similar thing, I think. So that one is more common, I think, than it used to be in my experience anyway.
Yeah. I've definitely been hit with the stock one where someone or some, you know, some person just said, hey, we don't have anything. Right. And that was deep in COVID. No one had anything. It was very hard to get any product over here. Even when they did, it was going to come on a container that they were paying much, much higher prices for. And so they were likely, even though they wanted more, they couldn't afford to bring in more. And so there was just all of sorts of stock headaches, right? And so I think they do tie together. But it's weird that you're getting these later on where I feel like I've been getting a lot more resistance instantly, like the very instant anything I say. They will do anything to get me off the phone right away and push me away rather than, you know, draw me in where I felt like, you know, back in 2015, certainly they were more open to hearing my pitch than I feel like they are currently. I don't understand. Like, I want to hear more about Australia, honestly. Like, I had a call. I don't even remember who it was off the top of my head. I'm terrible at names. Sorry. I apologize. But I had a call with one of our students who's Australian, crushing it, and just seeing how they were crushing it. I was like, man, I want to learn more about Australia. It seems like not that it's easier over there, which I think it is in some fashions. It's not as there's not as many gurus out there telling everyone to make these phone calls, to call this stuff and do that stuff. And so it felt like they're getting less bombardment as they are here in the States.
Yeah, I would say that's certainly true. It's probably true in the UK as well. You know, being somewhere in between the US and Australia size wise, I'd say that's probably the case. Yeah. Look, it's still a lot less common. And you think about when I started, literally no one was doing it back then at all, like as in calling suppliers. Like almost all of the suppliers I ever called in the beginning didn't even know what dropshipping was. Like had never heard the term, let alone, you know, that the sort of practice and that was a thing that they could do, right? You know, so yeah. In swings and roundabouts between here and over there where you are, you know, it's... There's a lot less of that going on, but it's a much smaller market. So, yeah, there's upsides and downsides to both, I think. But
well, the next one I've seen, and I'm just going to keep working through this list, John, is like I'll get hit with, yeah, sounds great. That's Bill. Bill handles that, but he's gone this week. And I'm not saying a word because that awkward pause exists on this phone call as well. Like, they'll just be like, yeah, that's Bill, and he's gone this week. And they won't say anything else. Man, I hope I'm not coming off too negative, but I do feel like it's been, again, I feel like there's somebody at the front with a sign-up that was just like, hey, you, fuck you. Like, go away. Like, it just seems like there's a bigger deterrence right away. And I want to put all this out there so that anyone listening to this realizes that's going to happen. And if they realize it's going to happen, they won't be so stressed out when they get hit with one of these things. They can just be like, oh, that's great. How do I reach Bill? Or is there an extension I can leave Bill a voicemail? Do you have Bill's email? I'd love to leave him a voicemail, get to know him. Because I don't want to be pushed away. That's what they want from you, I feel like, nowadays. And I'm generalizing, of course, here. But like, I feel like that's the way it's been for me, is I'm getting pushed away right away. And so I want anyone listening to this to be able to get around that. So again, we don't drop ship. Great. I'd still like to talk to someone who's coming a retailer for your brand. We're not accepting new dealers at this time. Awesome. I would love to know what that looks like in the future. Is there someone I can just start building a relationship with? Is there someone I can speak to and just start seeing what that looks like in the future? Bill handles this and he's gone this week. Great. Could you forward me to Bill's extension? I'd love to leave him a voicemail as well as like send him an email if you could possibly give me his email as well. You have to jump around these things. The only one I would say, John, that we mentioned already, which is different, is like we don't have any stock right now. What has been your plan to combat, hey, we just don't have any, like how could I sign you up? We have nothing to sell right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, I mean, I think obviously you recognize that as an objection, but like I kind of brush it aside at the same time and just say, yeah, look, I hear it. That's cool. There's no rush here. Why don't we just go ahead, get an account set up anyway. We've got some work to do on our end. Like we've got to familiarize ourselves with your products. We've got to get your products on our site. You know, we're going to build out some content around them and do all of this stuff. So we don't need to start selling them right away, but let's put that work together. Give us a chance to get that work done so that when you do have stock, you know, we can be right in there selling your products. You know, we can be ready to go. We don't need to sell right now. We're not in any rush. You know, we're a long-term business. So let's just get everything set up so we don't have to worry about it later.
Do you ever get pushback on that line?
Still, yeah. I mean, you'll still get the odd one who's like, no, I don't want to do it. And and in that case, you'll be like, okay, no worries. So when are you expecting your next stock? Yeah. Okay. Well, let's schedule in a call. I'm going to call you back at that time or just before then, and we're going to have the same conversation again. But yeah, I think objection handling isn't about solving everyone's objection. It's just about solving a percentage of their objection so you've got more yeses than noes. Really, it doesn't always work. There's no foolproof answer to any of these objections, right? But the worst thing you can do is just leave it at that, at whatever they say. So this is what, you know, and this is also why I love the fact that they're saying no more often, more easily than maybe they used to, is because most people who do this you know, who try to start a dropshipping business. When they get told no by a supplier, they just leave it at that. They go, oh no. They said no.
Dropshipping doesn't work.
Yeah, okay, no worries. I won't call you back. And that's literally why some of them say no, is because they want you to work for it, right? They want to see who's going to come back and keep trying and be persistent and actually are serious about building a business in whatever their space is, right? So, yeah. You do the objection handling and you say whatever, you know, needs to be said to try and deal with their whatever their issue is, which, you know, could be any number of things, but and you've got to give that a good go. But still, that's still not going to work for everybody, and that's okay, because you're just going to move them into the follow-up pile and you're going to keep following them up every so often, and sooner or later they're going to be like, holy crap, these guys are persistent, they're sticking around, right? Maybe we should actually be doing something. And we've got students who have been doing that, and the guys who have said no to them initially have called them up, called them back and said, well, you know, actually, we actually do think we want to work together now. Are you still interested in that?
You know? I mean, we'll get to more follow-up soon, but just on that point, I had that happen once, and the reason is remarketing. So they'll come look at you, and they'll look at your site and be like, I don't know, you know what? Check back in 30 days or 60 days, right? And because they're on my site, they are just getting followed around the internet, right? And if you've set up remarketing well, like we've taught in the course, they're going to see products, they're going to see banners, they're going to see stuff on Facebook, and they're going to start thinking you're this giant company simply because you understand how to run remarketing well. And so that was the case for me. They were just like, I'm seeing you everywhere. So obviously you're doing something right. We'd love to get you signed up. But you're right. I do want to push on that follow-up, but a few more things that we had here, right? So another one I've got from the gatekeeper is, great, please email yada yada at yadayada.com, right? And they'll simply push me off to email as fast as they can. And my response to that is, great, I'm happy to send an email, whoever they tell me to send it to, right? Assuming it's not some generic name. And if it is, I'm going to ask a similar question. It's like, great, who can I address this email to? And can you forward me to their voicemail? And I'm doing this because I want to make sure that they actually get this, right? If it's an email, it's easy to brush aside the email. If I leave them a voicemail, it's hard to ignore a voicemail and an email. And so if, like, the biggest thing I want to do is get past the gatekeeper. Like John said, very rarely are you ever going to talk to the decision maker when you make the phone call. So the ones that we've addressed so far are likely gatekeeper questions. Can you get past this gatekeeper? That is like step one, right? And if you get past the gatekeeper, you might get asked some other questions of, how will you market us? How many sales do you have? How long have you been in business? If you've listened to John and I before, and we've definitely addressed this on other podcasts, this is where you need to be honest. You need to let them know, hey, I'm trying to build something here. Show them the vision. Say, I'm trying to build something. I'm trying to change my family's life. I'm trying to change this industry. I'm trying to change people's lives. Whatever it is, show them your vision and let them know that, hey, while I may not have the track record to show here, I'm gonna bust my tail to make as many sales as we can in this business and change as many lives as we can. And so I'd like to be honest there. That's the type of stuff you're going to get from the actual decision maker, not from the person at the front. So we address the questions you're going to get at the front, the gatekeeper. There's a couple questions you're going to get from the person you're actually explaining this to. And obviously there's a script in the course that we would recommend you follow there. I do want to throw in just a couple other random things I've heard and then move into like the follow-up side of this, because I think follow-up is so, so important. So one of the random things I got was, and I think we might've talked about this on a show before, John, it was like, we're happy to approve you, but we're going to be the only supplier you sell. So think of pellet grills. There's 10, 20 brands of pellet grills out there. Imagine if I called Traeger and they were like, yes, you can sell Traeger, but you cannot sell anyone else besides Traeger. I am personally still working this. This happened to me and I'm still working this through. I haven't been able to crack this nut, and I'm putting it out there mostly because I kind of want to hear what John has to say here. John, what would you do if a brand told you that? If you and use the caveat knowing, you know, Traeger's a good one for pellet grills. They are the number one brand in pellet grills. What would you say to that? Like, you obviously you want Traeger on board, but you also kind of want to be able to sell other products. What would you do?
You know, I don't think I've ever gotten this personally. I don't think this one's ever come up for me. I have heard the odd person say that it's come up for them though. So I'm not suggesting that you're alone in this, Ben. But look, Ben showed me his t-shirt. I have no idea what's on it.
You don't know who Macho Man Randy Savage is?
Oh, yeah. I can't see it properly. Yeah. look, what would I say to them? I think I would have to be honest with them, and I would probably challenge them back a little bit and say, look, our vision is to be, the number one store for, in this space, which is, pellet grills, let's say. And I would say, sure, are you the only pellet grill company that people buy? You would like to be, yeah. But honestly, if you were me, would you only sell one brand of pellet grills? Like, how do you expect me to be the biggest store here? Like, for me, that's a bullshit response. Like, I have a fairly low threshold with some people on some things. I would say, I do challenge suppliers when they say some things. I would say, yeah, look, that's not a thing. Do you have any retailers that only sell your product online? They don't. They won't. There is nobody that is running a one brand store in any space. I've never seen it, other than stores that are secretly run by the brand, right?
Or like, local businesses too, right?
Yeah, okay. But I would say that's not our business model. That's not what we do. We're going to be the number one here. We're going to sell a lot of pellet grills. If you're not on here, we're not going to be selling yours. We're going to be selling somebody else's. I get that you want to be number one in the space. And if your product is the best, then you're going to be number one and we're going to feature you on our site. But we want to serve the whole market. And so we want to be able to serve the people who aren't yet buying your brand with other brands that are in the space. And, by coming to our site to look at those other brands, they're also going to get exposed to your brand, right? We're going to feature you in our marketing and our email marketing and all that sort of thing. So we're going to be bringing your brand to a market that you're not already in front of.
Selfishly, I'm going to keep playing this game with you because I did most of what you said there, and here was their response. And I'm going to use it as Traeger. We believe that we are the best product on the market and that the other grills are inferior. They're dangerous. Like, those grills could blow up. And so we don't want anyone to be able to sell those other grills because we are the best on the market. And we think because we're higher priced that if you were to market us next to those other brands, the customer simply would overlook the fact that we're a better product because they wouldn't even click in. They would see this pellet grill's at $2,000 and we're $3,000 or $4,000 sometimes. And so people wouldn't even click us through there. So while we hear you and that we want to believe customers would find the way, by only selling us, you're giving them no other option other than showing them that this is the way.
Yeah, cool. So, wow, I'm surprised to hear that you think those other ones would blow up. Where have you seen that? Have you got some evidence of that happening? I don't want to sell products that would blow up anyway. Like, I challenge it back. Like, yeah. You're not beholden to this big brand, right? I mean, if they want to be dickheads and not play ball, guess what? They're not going to be forever the biggest brand in the space. That's not how successful businesses operate. I'm sorry. I would just challenge. I would say, can you show me where that's happened? I'd love to see that. Like, call them out on bullshit. That's bullshit, right? Literally, if those other brands' products were exploding, they would not be allowed to sell them on the market. Like, let's face it.
Right.
They'd be recalled. They'd be off the market, right? So call it out for what it is. Say, yeah, sure, whatever. On the premium product thing, I would actually challenge that as well. I'd say, no, well, actually, customers, and there's plenty of marketing research to show this, customers are drawn to premium products. We're a premium product store. When people see that your products are more expensive, guess what they're going to assume? They're going to assume they're the best products in the market. And if they really are the best products in the market, then it's going to be very easy for us to demonstrate that on our site. So what are you worried about? Like, your higher price tags are actually going to make you look better on our site and going to lead more people to look at them because they want to see, why are these products so expensive? Why are they so good? And if your products are as good as you say they are, we're going to be able to show that on our site.
I think you nailed it. And believe me, I've given most of these things back. The only, there's like one caveat, which is like the guy on the phone doesn't give a shit. Like he's just doing what his boss told him to do in the meeting, right? And so that's the hard part of like, how do you get around this? Personally, and if anybody experiences this and solves it, let me know. Because I haven't yet. Personally, I'm trying to find someone who, so since they enacted this rule, no one further can sell anything but them. But anyone behind that rule, which was like whatever, a year ago, they can sell whatever they want. So I'm trying to find someone who has given up on this business model, but had the grandfather status. And I'm trying to like, I've made a few emails trying to buy one of their businesses for, you know, pennies on the dollar, just to have that status and bring them on board just to get around this issue. Because again, you got to be creative here sometimes, but I think you nailed it. Actually, I kind of want to, we should have role played because you're pretty good at this, John. Like I should have served these up to you like a nice little, you know, a ball on a tee here for you to knock them out of the park. Cause that was good. That was really good. So the only other thing that I want to bring up is something that comes up often, which is, yes, we would like you to become a retailer for us, but you need to spend X thousands of dollars first or buy this many units first. Or I think that's a common thing that we see from our members, from people in the free group who have started this on their own. It's a very, very common thing to say, yep, we're happy, but there is a minimum order. And I think there's many unique ways to get around this, John. Here, I'm going to give you mine, and I'm curious if you have something completely different than that. So for me, when they say, hey, we want you to place a minimum order, I usually run through this exact phrase, which is, all right, here's the deal. We're a new business. We have set aside X marketing dollars. Doesn't even matter what it is. You can just say we've set aside a certain amount of marketing dollars. If we were to onboard you and many of the other brands we're bringing on, and every single brand said we should have to spend X amount of dollars, number one, we're going to fill up our warehouse with products that we don't even know are going to sell, right? We're going to burn up all of our marketing dollars. And we're likely, like you're asking me to buy, whatever, 10 units right now. I don't know which units are going to sell. Now, you can give me an idea of what's going to sell, but once we actually move some product, then I'm going to know what's going to sell. So what I'd like to do is start drop shipping out of the gates and go see what's going to move. And then at that point, if you are still requiring me to place a minimum order, at least I'll know what products are going to move and we can go from there. My whole goal here is to get them around the fact of placing this minimum order and help them understand that I'm really thinking through this problem. And that if I place a minimum order with every single brand I have, number one, I'm going to be out of money. Number two, I'm going to order things that don't sell and I'm going to be stuck with those things rather than ordering things that I know are actually going to sell. And so hopefully I've literally had that line only turned down one single time. And so I think that line works pretty good. John, what do you do in that situation when they're like, hey, we need a minimum order quantity in order to get started?
I once again, probably might be more of my personality. Every time I hear an objection of any sort, almost any sort, there's a few exceptions, I always counter it with the word why. Explain to me why the logic behind saying you're happy to drop ship in the future, but now I have to buy a whole bunch of stock. Why? What? That doesn't even make logical sense. If you're happy to drop ship in 2 months, why can't you do it now? Like, just help me understand here why that's a necessity for your business. And like actually hear like what do they have to say to that? It's the same as like if somebody says, no, we don't do drop shipping, like that classic example. Like if you hear that from an actual decision maker and not the gatekeeper, like they say, like you get past the gatekeeper and they still say, no, we don't do drop shipping, like don't go, yeah, okay. You always say why. Why don't you do drop shipping? That seems really strange that you don't do it. Can you help me understand why you don't do it? And see what they actually, well, like, what is the actual reason that they don't do drop shipping? Now, what is the actual reason that they need you to purchase a bunch of stock in advance once, and then they'll let you do drop shipping? I don't know. I don't know what there is no reason. It's a made up thing, right? Because there's no logical reason for that from a supplier's perspective. It doesn't help their business in any way. It doesn't help them in any way. It's not actually doing anything. So I'll just challenge that. Look, if they want to stick to it, and if they're going to just say something ridiculous like, well, you know, that's just our company's policy and there's nothing I can do about it, and, you know, like blah, 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 then certainly, yes, you can have a creative response. I think, Ben, your response is a good one if you want to sort of talk around that. Obviously, you know, you may... You know, we certainly have students who have gone ahead and done that. Like if they've just got one or two suppliers who are saying that they have gone ahead and bought some stock in advance and held on to it, and that's been okay, an okay thing to do. And usually in that case, they would say, you know, sure, I'll, you know, whatever the minimum amount is, let's say it's $2,500 or something like that. Sure, we'll pay that, but can you keep the products in your warehouse? Because we don't have a warehouse to keep them in, so we're not going to do that. You know, if you've got the money and it's only like one or two suppliers that's saying that, you know, you might just say, oh, whatever, no problems. If it's a supplier that you've deemed as you would really like to have in your business. But yeah, like I say, I like to like talk through with them why that's actually the case and how that's a benefit to their business, rather than just moving ahead and selling some stuff and doing the drop shipping that they're saying they agree to, right? Because they're saying that if you can put up a minimum and then they're going to do drop shipping later, they're saying we agree to do drop shipping. There's no problem. So I'll just say, why make a barrier to this not happening? Let's just say we'll do drop shipping from the start and get started. We'll start selling stuff straight away. We'll make up your minimum order quantity really quick, and we'll, you know, happy families.
Yeah, I think, you know, just to touch on that, I set up a relationship with our 3PL so that anyone listening to this, if you're serving the US market, and you are in need of a place to put a couple pieces. First, go with John's method. Just be like, hey, well, can you store this for us? You'll almost always get a yes because they're storing it anyway. If it's a no, or if there's a brand out there that just won't let you drop ship whatsoever and they want you to store some stuff, I have a hookup for you. I don't want to just hand this out because I don't want her to get bombarded with people who are testing the waters. I want, if you're dead serious and you have freight ready to go, come talk to me, reach out to me, and I have a hookup for you who can just do a couple products, and they're cheap and they're awesome. And so happy to make that introduction. I know I made it for someone in one of our students already who really, really appreciated that. So if that's you and you're listening, I have the hookup for that. But let's talk follow-up, John. Let's talk follow-up here. So I would say 80% of the time, if not more, when I call a supplier, I'm not landing them on the spot. There is some follow-up that is needed in order to actually process this. And even if you get a yes on that first call, which is great, you still have to follow up. There's like the odds of it, like, hey, my name's Ben, blah, blah, blah. Oh, we're good to go. Sounds great. Here's my email. And they just send it over and you fill out the paperwork and you're ready to rock and roll. It's just like, that's not necessarily how it works. And so I think that was the origin of this question from Daniel, is how to effectively follow up with suppliers. And so I personally use almost like my own CRM that I built, but there are some amazing CRMs out there that help you put them into a pipeline, so you know when to follow up. Is there a strategy that you stick to, John, for following up with suppliers? Is there any, you know, X amount of days, or is there a pipeline that you put them in? Is there a CRM you use? Is there a Chrome extension you use to follow up on this? Is it a simple spreadsheet? How are you effectively following up with suppliers to make sure, number one, it's a yes. Number two, you actually get the paperwork. Number three, you're ready to go. They get the information back over to you, the price list, the photos, the, you know, zip files, whatever it needs to be. What are you doing to effectively follow up with suppliers, John?
If it was just me myself, I just use a spreadsheet myself, right? And I'll have columns in it to track through the various stages of follow-up. And I will set reminders for myself in my calendar system to, you know, revisit that spreadsheet, and that becomes a like a task in my weekly, you know, planning is you know, to at various points is to just revisit that and do any required follow up actions that are due as a result of that. When I've done it with a team of people, we've used like a project management software type thing, like Asana or Trello or something like that, to, you know, have visibility over where various supplier contacts are up to in that process. So, but if it's just me working by myself on calling suppliers, you know, I don't really need the, you know, for me, you're not doing enough calls to justify a CRM or anything like that. I mean, a CRM's like if you're doing sales and you've got hundreds and hundreds of follow-ups you've got to schedule in. I don't think it gets that complex. Personally, in terms of the follow-up, like, you know, it's always walking that line between, you know, making follow-up effective and being a pain in the ass. So I'm certainly not calling the supplier up every day and going, hey, have you done this yet? Hey, have you done this yet? You know, usually if I speak to somebody and they say they're going to do something, noting that people tend to be busy, I'm probably keeping my follow-ups to 48 hours at the most, you know, between contacts. 48 hours to 3 days. And if I'm not seeing what I expected to see in that time frame, unless they've given me a different time frame, like if I speak to somebody and say, look, yeah, I'm going to get that to you, it's going to take me about 5 days to put it all together, I'm going to have it to you in 5 days, then I'm going to put in my spreadsheet, I need to call them, I'm going to put the date in, the time, and I'm going to say, yeah, I need to call this person on that day. That's going to be in my spreadsheet, that in my supplier call spreadsheet. So I'll, if I haven't got it by then, yeah, I'm going to jump straight on the phone and I'm going to start following up with them. If I don't have any sort of specific time frame, then like I say, I think personally, you know, 48 hours to 70, so 48 to 72, I don't know the maths, whatever. 48 hours, 2 to 3 days between follow-ups. Simply because I put myself in their shoes, and literally if you are somebody out there and you pester me every day for something I haven't done yet, I am no more likely to respond to you than before, and I'll actually make you wait for longer. I have a life. I got 4 kids. I'm not sitting here waiting on your every email to come in, right? I run a big business, like all that sort of stuff. Like people don't, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like people expect that just because you can send an email, you are owed a response immediately. Let me tell you, it ain't the case. You're going to the bottom of the list if you're that person, always, for me personally. So, you know.
On that point, it's easy for me
to be. I don't daily pester people.
It's easy for me to be empathetic to the person listening to this who's like, they're just starting. Number one, it feels like if you don't get a response right away, it's the end of the world, that maybe they don't want you. But also, like when I first started, every email I got, I would answer instantly. Every text message I got, I would answer instantly. Yeah. The more
you don't get any.
Yeah. The more busy you get, the more you realize, yeah, oh shit, I'm just going to put this off. I'm going to put this off. And then my inbox becomes like my to-do list, right? Like rather than actually answer, it'll be like, I'll leave that unread for tomorrow and take care of it. And so I have empathy for the person listening to this in the beginning who's, number one, they're used to responding quickly and getting answers quickly. And number two, they're anxious. They want to get going, right? And so I understand, but I'm with John, 24, 48, 72, give them some time. But more importantly, project the future. So whether you got a hard yes on the phone, whether you got a soft yes on the phone, whether you got a no on the phone, project that you're already working. Every email that you send to follow up, like, hey, John, thanks. If I got a no, it's, hey, John, thanks so much for the call today. Address their concerns, show them the vision, and then use words like, I can't wait for us to work together. I can't wait to send you sales. My team's looking forward to uploading your wonderful products. We're looking forward to running ads for you. I'm always projecting as if I got a yes. And if I did get a yes, I'm already projecting of like how anxious we are to build out information and product pages around their brand and how amazing their brand is and how excited we are to get started. I'm always trying to project as if we have a great relationship, as if we're already selling for them, as if we're bringing them sales, so that, you know, they get this sense of amazingness around my brand, as well as, like, if it's a soft yes, that's not over the finish line yet, right? I want to make sure I'm continually pushing that forward to get that over the finish line. If it's a no, I'm going to turn that into a yes. I'm going to make that guy think on the phone he said yes to me based on these emails and how excited I am to work together. And so, you know, I'm with John, right? Whatever happens on the phone, if you got a hold of somebody, you're going to want to follow up with an email. I do it same day. I follow up, thank them for the call, let them know how excited we are to work together. We can't wait to send them sales. We can't wait to build this relationship. No, yes, doesn't matter. I'm following up immediately after that phone call with an email. Mm. If I haven't heard from them in 24 to 48 hours, probably 48, I'm sending them another email and just letting them know, hey, it was really great talking to you the other day. I can't wait to see some paperwork so that we can get this up and running as fast as possible. My team is anxiously, eagerly waiting to upload your products. I can't wait to hear from you, things like that. So I'm on board there. Daniel, if we miss something here, if we missed on how to effectively follow up here, I want to know what you're asking so that we can make sure we get that answer. So I commented on your post and said, we record this today. Here we are. I'm going to put this out right away. So you should get this within a day or two of asking. What if there was something there? I want to know what we missed. John, do you think there's something in that question that we missed as far as like how to effectively follow up? Because it's got to be more than just time, right? It's got to be more than just like, how do I reach back out? For me, it's language, right? Which I tried to address there. But is there something else in that question that you're reading into as far as what maybe he's actually asking here deep down inside?
How to effectively follow up. I mean, to me, that's, I mean, it's a combination of time, the how, and, you know, which is going to be a combination of phone and email, you know, definitely. Anytime you're sending emails and you're not getting a response, you should revert back to following it with a phone call, right? So if I've sent 3 emails to somebody and they haven't replied to any of them, I'm not going to keep emailing them. I'm going to start calling them at that point and trying to get the message across via phone. Right. And, but once again, the follow-up to me is sort of as well dictated by what was the initial contact? Like, what did we talk about? You know, how into it were they? Like, what did they say? What did they commit to doing? All of that sort of thing. I mean, to me, in some cases, I do play that a little bit by ear rather than saying, I'm definitely going to follow up with everybody in exactly the same way, right? I think there's a little bit of common sense that you have to apply here and just, you know, be prepared to be flexible around how you are following up with people.
I think
as
it's
well.
Case by case too, right? Let's say you got a no. John, how soon after a no are you following back up?
Like just a flat no to hard, everything.
Hard no.
Hard no. Look, I'm probably gonna I'm gonna leave it until I've made some progress of some sort, right? But not a really long time. Ideally it would be cool if that person remembered that they had spoken to you in the past when you speak to them next. Not like I'm not going to leave it 3 months or 4 months or something like that. They're going to forget. It's going to be a brand new conversation a lot of the time. But I want to be probably I'm going to call them back. I think if I'm moving at a reasonable pace, I'm going to call them back just before I launch my site. And I'm going to say, look, we spoke a couple of weeks, depending on what the time frame is. Let's say we spoke 2 weeks ago. We're about to launch our site and we've got this brand, this brand, this brand, this brand, this brand, and this brand on board from this market. We'd still love to have you on board and I've still got time to get you on for when we start selling stuff. Is this something we can talk about again? All right. And see if that moves them. If that doesn't move them, then I'm going to say, okay, look, thanks for your time. I'm going to wait another few weeks till I start making some sales. Then I'm going to call them back and say, hey, man, just catching up again. Hope your business is doing really well. Hope things are good for you. Just wanted to touch base on that. We're starting to sell these, whatever their product type is. Starting to sell these products. Once again, we really want to be selling your products because we're selling your competitors' products right now. can we have a talk about this again? And just like, you know, obviously respectfully and all that sort of thing. So, you know, I'd probably be following them up no more than a month apart, I'd say.
Yeah,
but once again, there's if somebody said no, there's no point calling him back 3 days later either. You're not going to have, like, what are you bringing to the table now that is going to move them at a really short interval? Nothing. So I think there's a balancing act between not leaving it too long and also having something new to bring to the table. And there's various points as your business launches and grows where you do have something new to bring to the table. And those things definitely, I mean, the amount of times where somebody told me no in the beginning, then I went back to them once we had some sales. And we could say, like, we're getting traction in the market, blah, blah, blah. Like, that has changed the response from me quite a few times, for sure.
I give them the, hey, we're selling a lot of brand X and brand Y. And yeah. A lot of the people who are calling in are like, hey, how does this compare to your brand? Or how come you guys don't carry that brand? Or
yeah.
Are you planning on carrying brand in the future?
That's
right?
A good one.
And just give them a lot of hints. Yeah. And then one that I think probably no one's thinking of doing that actually works is put their brand into Google. So we'll just say it's whatever, Traeger pellet grills. Go to Google, type in Traeger and hit return. So it searches Traeger, then put a space and VS and then a space, Traeger versus, and go find the most search volume there from the brand, a brand you carry. So if there's 10 Traeger versus 10 different brands, whichever one has the most search volume and it's a brand you carry. So that could be number, you know, 2 on the list or 8 on the list, whatever, go build that page. And then find their headquarters, which, you know, doesn't work as well with COVID now because everyone's remote, and remarket to that area, to that city, people interested in pellet grills, and remarket that article. Or in an ideal world, it's going to rank because most people just don't create those versus articles. Mm-hmm. And then you can say, hey, we're getting a lot of traffic on comparing this brand to your brand, and we'd love to put your brand on there. And, you know, we think your brand is better. Can we reshape this article, or can we, you know, we'd love to sell your products so that we're actually moving some of your products when comparing this, because right now we're comparing them and we're telling them that yours is good, but all we have to offer them is this other brand. And so that's where we're directing people at the end of the article, is over to this competitor brand of yours. That works way better than I want to believe it should work. But it's ego, I guess. I'm not even sure what it is, but it works every single time. As soon as you pit, not even pit them, just like let them know that they're missing out on sales and those sales are going to their competitors because you're not allowing us to sell. However you frame that, it works. I promise you it works. Now, of course, there's some brands out there that they just don't work with other retailers and they're not going to care, but I'm telling you this works. It works quite often, honestly.
Yep. Awesome.
Well, that's all I got for following up. Daniel, if you have some more questions around that, throw them in the group. Throw them in. If you're in our Slack, I'm not sure if you're in our Slack or not, throw them in the group, throw them in Slack. We'd love to answer them for you. And as always, dropship, Patreon, podcast at gmail.com. We have literally zero emails in there from last week. No one is using this. So all of you listening, this is a personal email address that goes directly to John and myself, and we'd love to help you and answer your specific questions. Dropship, Patreon, podcast at gmail.com. And if there's any of you out there who are willing to volunteer your website to talk about Love Your Customer Sequences, private labeling, how to build extra income streams, how to build out avatars in your business, email marketing, any of those things, and you're willing to put your business in the forefront for these podcast episodes, obviously behind a bit of a paywall here, as well as our students in the elite membership are getting this as well, but we'd love to feature you and build this for you. I think it's a no-brainer. So if you're listening to this and that's you, reach out. We'd love to do it for you. John and I both love business, think about it all the time, can't turn it off, and don't know why anyone would want to. And because of that, we started a second podcast where we can talk about everything we've ever wanted to talk about in business, not just dropshipping. We like talking about all things business. So if you want to hear John and I talk about all sorts of stuff, from camel meat dropshipping businesses to PDF dropshipping to a guy gambling $100 every single day on YouTube Shorts, to how OnlyFans taught us lessons in business. We're all over the place over there, but it's a really fun podcast. So if you're a podcast listener, you love John and I, head over to your podcast player of choice and look for the Low Bar Podcast. You'll see a blue image and you'll see a cartoon version of John and myself. and go back and start at episode one. I promise you will not regret this. This is one of the more fun projects that I have done recently. I know John's having fun too, so we'd love it if you joined us. Check out the Low Bar Podcast on YouTube or wherever you prefer to listen to podcasts.